Okay, we are live on KPTZ FM. I'm Charlie Bermant here with our interview series, Local Candidates. Today we have a very interesting race for position 4. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so first of all, let me introduce my guest, Owen Rowe, who is running for the seat. Say hi.
Hi, Charlie.
Okay, and then we have Bob Gray, who is the current holder of the seat. Are you there?
Hi, Charlie.
Okay, we're both here. So the reason this seat is so interesting is that Owen, who has not held public office here in Port Townsend before, will become the city councilor, and he will be elected with or not elected with no opposition at all. So he's just kind of walking into the seat. He is succeeding Bob, who has held the seat for 2 terms. So maybe, you know, let's kind of run it like a regular campaign here. Owen, who are you, and why do you want to be a city councilor?
So, thanks, Charlie. I am a 22-year resident of Port Townsend. I've left a couple times and come back because I love it here. And I would like to see a couple of things happen in the city. I'd like to see us address climate change. I'd like to see us make city government more accessible and get greater communication. I'd like to see our community become more affordable. And the background that I bring to it is primarily I would like to see us invest in our arts and culture, which is a lot of what brings people here and what makes people want to move here.
Okay, so then the first question everybody always asks is, when people come here, where do they live? This is really a really freaky real estate situation right now, and it's partly free enterprise, but then again, you know, it's a community problem. So how do we address that?
So, a number of issues. Right now at the Maritime Center, there's an affordable housing forum that's going on right today. And it's put on by the Home Builders Association and the Association of Realtors. And so there was a lot of good information there about this is a statewide problem. This is a nationwide problem. This is not something that every tool is within the control of the city of Port Townsend. But there's a lot of things going on. There's the Olecap development that's going up on Capitol Hill, or on Castle Hill, right next to the QFC. I think what we can do in Port Townsend is encourage building within the already developed areas of the city. I think for climate change in particular, but also for community development, I am not in favor of sprawling in a suburban manner, even within the city limits.
So Bob, you've been on the council for 8 years. Has the city done enough during that time to address this problem?
No, it hasn't. I think... you know, I boil it down to one major issue that I'm aware of is zoning. You know, we have these different levels of zoning, and R4, which is apartment buildings, which we need, both market rate and low income rates. And we have developers who own R4 property, and they could develop is the exact same number of units if it was R3, because there are more restrictions with R4 and it's a lot more costly. So we have developers sitting on property up by Castle Hill, and I don't know what they're going to do. One of the pieces of property has been for sale for quite some time, and no one's bought it either because people are not building R4. And why we can't rezone those to R3 to allow these people to build. I've asked that question. I've never really gotten a good answer.
Okay, but so we're talking about bringing, if I didn't mishear you, bringing people to Port Townsend. Is there a time where we just say, you know, don't come here, come somewhere else? Or is that just a rude way of... of saying it.
That's out of our control. I mean, this is something that, because of the shape of the housing markets, because of climate change, we're getting climate refugees here already. And, you know, there's no legal basis for us to say you can't come here.
No, I'm not saying legal. I mean, I know that I met someone in Uptown the other day who was looking to move here, and I kind of told them not to. And I know they walked away thinking I was a real jerk in trying to keep people out of my hometown. But the truth is, you know, you only have so much space here. So is there a way government can manage that without seeming like they're fascists or something?
Well, let me take a shot at this one. You know, Charlie, people are going to come here and buy. And actually, our real estate market, which is very expensive, is hotter than it's ever been, because people who have the money are able to come here and buy a piece of property and build a house or buy an existing house. And so what's happening is, what I see is that really the wealthy are going to, you know, take over this town. I mean, the people who are in the service jobs are not going to be able to live here. Now, they might be able to live out in the county, and if the county ever gets their act together with the sewer program system out there, maybe they'll be able to build more housing out there. But it's going to be a commute. We're already a commute city, you know. So I moved here about 18 years ago, thank goodness, because I was able to, my wife and I were able to get a house, but we could not move here today. There was just no way.
Well, yeah, I've lived here since 2010, but we bought a house 3 years ago, and it was vastly different, because I remember us having two or three properties we could choose from, and you know, it took a couple of weeks. But right now, you see a property and you grab it.
And it's cash, and it's a same day offer, and that's it.
Yeah, my neighbor across the street, who's lived in that house 35 years, sold it in a day, and they had 30 offers, and it was sold for $20,000 over the asking price, all cash, and by a single person. So I mean, that's the reality right now, and I don't see that changing. Now, if there is another recession, like the last one, I mean, I hate to hope for that, but that would definitely probably make it a little bit more affordable.
So it actually seems like this isn't a Port Townsend problem. It's an everywhere problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the ability for the local government to deal with this might be limited. So let's move on to something that we can't deal with. Parking. So I know this is like the most boring part of any interview, but it's a huge issue. Do you, either one of you, have any out of the meter ideas that we could talk about?
Well, I think meters is the right direction, but I don't think we want individual meters for each space. I think you know, the kiosks like they have in cities, where you get a little tag and you stick it on your window. That's the way to do it, and that would not be too disruptive to the downtown environment. But I think, in addition to putting a price on this free infrastructure that is provided to residents and tourists and people who work in downtown, in addition to putting that price on it, we need to make it much easier for people to not bring their cars downtown, and that means transit. So I know the city has been talking with Jefferson Transit about ways to increase shuttle downtown. I think we need it at least every 15 minutes from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday service. And if Jefferson Transit is not able to do that, the city has the ability to create a transportation improvement district or a transportation benefit district that, you know, could fund that service and you know, make those jobs and those businesses accessible to people without bringing their cars downtown.
But what about the 2-hour limit? If we put in those machines, did we still have a 2-hour limit? Or I know that gets a lot of criticism from people, both tourists and locals.
So there are ways to figure out what the appropriate time limit is. I think if it's paid parking, then you know maybe it could be a 4-hour max, something like that, that allows people to have lunch and go to some shops or go see a movie. You know, that 2 hours is not realistic for tourists, and it's really not—it's not usable at all for people who work downtown.
Yeah.
Everybody takes advantage of the lack of enforcement, and you know that's not fair on anyone.
So all these problems, are they from the recession, resulting from the recession? The fact that, you know, governments no longer have the money to provide services that they once did.
Huh. Well, you know, it's. I don't think the parking part of it's result of the recession. This has been a problem, and the city has studied this thing over and over and over again. They have 3 studies that I know of that I've never seen, so I don't know what the results of those studies were. But it's an amazing topic, the paid parking, because we have a paid parking lot here in Port Townsend, and it's been running for years, and it's doing quite well. It's down by the Maritime Center, right across the street, where the Landfall restaurant used to be, where you put the money in a little slot. It's during the summer. And why we can't expand that and do that other places is beyond me. It's so bizarre that we have paid parking downtown, where it's 2 hours on one side of the street and 4 hours on the other side of the street. Does that make any sense to anybody? I mean, it's just, it's kind of really bizarre.
Yeah. Okay. So, Bob, you served 2 terms. Your first term, you were kind of a long shot, and you unseated an incumbent, which was a pretty big deal. And from my observation, you've been kind of the protest vote for a lot of things on the council. All the votes, you know, were 7-0 usually until you got elected. Talk about that role. I mean, did you feel like you were against the others, or if you were differently oriented, or am I just making more out of this than it was?
No, I mean, it's kind of frustrating to be in that situation. I wouldn't call it a protest vote, though, because I really thought I had a basis for what I was saying. But I was a stickler for the financial part of this, and I think the city has spent money and borrowed. The city council has borrowed over $20 million in the last 10, 15 years. The council can borrow money without having a way to repay it. And so they have to take that money then out of different funds and shift it around to make those bond payments. The bond payment about $1.5 million a year. Now, if you had that money, now I'm not saying all those projects were bad, a lot of them were good, but if you had some of that money, you could put it into affordable housing. You could devise a parking plan and pay for it. Everything costs money. And right now, we don't have anything to spare, and it doesn't look like we will, especially if there's another recession. If there's another recession, we're going to have a very difficult time here.
Okay, we are on KPTZ. I'm Charlie Burmant, position 4 City Council, position FOUR of City Council is being discussed right now. You just heard Bob Gray, the incumbent. He's retiring after 2 terms, and his successor, presumed successor, Owen Rowe, who is unopposed. This is KPTZ. We were here for another 14 minutes with this discussion. Owen, so tell me about what it's like to run unopposed.
Well, it's mostly pretty easy, but I have been missing the chance to hear other viewpoints. I have been talking to people in the community and listening to what their questions are, what their concerns are. But you know, this is the first sort of debate, and I will be participating in the voter forum, League of Women Voters forum, in October. And I would love to have more opportunities to see what's going on in the city and what's on people's minds. I've been going to city council meetings. I've been talking to people. But so thank you for having us on here today. And even though this is a little artificial, it's good to have a context for this conversation.
So when did you decide that you wanted to be on the city council?
I'd been thinking about it for a while, but what actually led me into it, Bob approached me. Bob asked if I had ever thought about it, and I thought, well, okay, yeah, I'll try it this year. But ending up unopposed, I don't know how that happened. It's very strange. It's, with Bob stepping down, with Bob retiring, it's essentially an open seat. And so that's the one that should be an easy contest that people would want to sign up for. And I don't know how I got lucky.
Well, Tyler Vega was on here a couple weeks ago with mm-hmm. David Faber. And I asked him the question, why are you running against David? Because David's a strong candidate. I mean, just presuming that he's an incumbent mm-hmm. When there was an open seat. And his answer was interesting in two ways. First of all, he is a supporter or colleague or sympathizer with Bob. They are politically aligned. And you, Owen, were endorsed by Bob, and Tyler did not want to challenge someone who was endorsed by Bob. On the other hand, maybe this is perhaps a bit of a contradiction. He said he did not expect to win. He was saying the filing fee was worth it to be able to ask Faber some questions on record, and they had a pretty good discussion. Of course, then again, he could have run for this seat, but then he would have had the danger of actually winning, and maybe that's not what he wanted. Bob, were you actively recruiting for a successor then?
I knew Owen. I've seen him at work, and I really thought he'd make a great city councilor. I was surprised that it was unopposed, but if I had anything to do with that, that's fine. Actually, when I ran, I could have run for an open seat, but I wanted to challenge somebody because I enjoy that part of it. I enjoy the debating and the issues, and I'm glad you're talking to Owen, even though he's running. My second term, I thought someone would run against me, but they didn't. And so I had a hard time getting invited to the forums. In fact, I had to beg to come to them because no one was challenging me. So I really thought to run against somebody was a really good idea, because then if you won, you have the backing of the majority of those people who voted. If you run unopposed, you're in, but, people will vote for you, but, do they know you and do they support you? So, it's a double-edged sword for that.
And how many people did you approach for this?
One.
I didn't know that. Thank you, Bob.
I got lucky. No,
I'll have to ask you sometime who else was on that list.
No, I didn't. It was a very short list. And I wasn't the only one who suggested Owen. Others had suggested him to me, too. So a group of us got together with Owen at the Uptown Pub, and we talked it over a beer. And he went away from that saying he'd think about it. So.
Right. So. But the last few years, the council, you said you're more of a financial stickler, and that was the basis of your dissenting votes. I joked around last time we were running, called you Bob Streperous, but nobody's laughing. Anyway, so Owen, you're going to be in here, and you're going to have the Bob Streperous seat. Does your presence mean that they're going to be fewer opposing votes, or?
Well, I don't think I will necessarily apply the same level of scrutiny. I mean, that's been Bob's career and his perspective, but. I do intend to use the city council's oversight role and consider what is coming up before the city, what is proposed by staff as policies or decisions that need to be made, and whether those decisions are actually going to continue to support the affordability of town, whether housing or jobs availability, whether they'll support creating a good community. I think, you know, much more than what happens in the November election, I think the new city manager, John Morrow, is going to really change the tone and the perception of city government. And he's contracted to start on November 1st. So the current city council has hired him. The current city council is setting the budget for 2020 right now. So John Morrow won't have a lot of leeway for, you know, kind of putting his own print on things for up to a year. But I think the kind of communication and access to city staff will change significantly.
So Bob, you were in the middle of this selection process. What's your evaluation looking back on it? Did we pick the right guy?
I certainly think so. But good luck, Owen. I mean, it takes a lot of work. And we get the information usually on Thursday late. Like, we're going to have a meeting on Monday, and it's going to be a heavy meeting with two public meetings as part of our meeting. And we get that information on Thursday afternoon, and you're going to spend all weekend. And really, just not just reading this stuff, I wanted to talk to people about it. I wanted to talk to people I knew, who what their opinions were about it, about the subjects. And that's a difficult thing. I left after two terms because I believe in term limits, and I thought I should set an example for that. But also, I'm a bit tired of it. I might run again in 2 years. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah, some term. So there are term limits for the president, and, you know, Obama can't ever run again. So,
right. Yeah.
But that's kind of an interesting question, because you're unopposed, which means there aren't two people who want this job in town.
Right.
Ariel Spicer was unopposed, which was another instance of somebody just walking into an office. Why don't people want to run? I mean, is it too much work, or are they, you know?
It is a lot of work. I mean, I can check this with Bob, but my impression is that the city council members, it's a solid 10 hours a week because you're on all kinds of other committees and other boards and commissions around the city and the county. And the mayor's job is something like 20 hours a week because you're also the official representative of the city. And the mayor is elected by the city council from the members of the council.
Right.
And so the city councilors get $500 a month for doing that quarter-time job. So that's $6,000 a year. So that's not minimum wage. And the mayor gets, as an hourly rate, gets even less. So this is not a job that is accessible to a lot of people in town. You either are retired on a steady, secure income, or you have a professional career or some high-wage career or business that allows you the time to spend on city council work.
Sure, but, you know, we are lucky enough to have two attorneys, or I would say lucky, but, you know, some other people might differ. We have David Faber and Ariel Spicer are both working lawyers, which can't hurt in these days of, you know, legal craziness. But so the mayor, you know, Deborah is running against a challenger, but that person, Monica McHager, is not running for mayor. She is running for council.
That's right.
As you pointed out, the new mayor will be selected by the new council when they're sworn in. And generally, in my experience here, being here for three mayors, they do two terms, they go away, and then maybe they come back. So who can be mayor?
That's a very good question. So among the people currently on the council.
The question is, we know who can be mayor.
Right.
I mean, you could conceivably be elected as mayor. I would think you wouldn't be.
Well, I have no experience in the role or on council. And the other thing is, as I was saying before about the accessibility, I couldn't afford it. I'm 51. I still need to be working, for a reasonable wage, not what we pay the mayor.
So Bob, who on the council do you think should be the next mayor?
Well, I would revise the system. I would have, there's a deputy mayor and there's a mayor, which is selected by the council. But I would give everybody on the council the opportunity to be deputy mayor and then go up to the mayor position. And I would have two years for the mayor and go on to the next person. I just think it would be much better council if everybody had the chance to be that person.
And that's so the co-op board, which I'm currently president of, works in a similar fashion. And it's bench depth. It's the idea that, this is a community endeavor. It's a group endeavor. No individual council member has any authority. It's the authority of the council overall. And so it's in the interest of the council to develop that skill, that leadership, servant leadership, if you will, in everybody who is sharing that job.
Yeah, I would disagree a little bit about the power of the mayor, because they really control the agenda.
They literally set the agenda.
They set the agenda, and the agenda is everything. And I knew I would never have a chance to be mayor because of the way I voted, but... I think I would have been a damn good mayor, but if everybody had that chance, it'd be a more democratic process. It really would be.
But I asked the same question of David Faber, basically, and he said, he doesn't want it because he can't, he doesn't have the extra time. So again, maybe what you were suggesting is more egalitarian, but maybe someone, certain council members would want to opt out.
Well, they might, but then what will happen probably is one of the people who has been mayor before will be mayor, mm-hmm. and it won't be a person who hasn't been the mayor. So I think it'd be a better process to rotate it. Whoever wants it should be able to contribute that way.
So you're not getting boxed in for an endorsement here for next time?
No, I'm not.
And I would also encourage somebody like David to think about taking one for the team, as it were. We're all in this together, and maybe he could do it for just 2 years.
Uh-huh. And they could divide up those responsibilities. Yeah. Deputy mayor really does little or nothing, during that period of time. They attend a lot of meetings and stuff, but they could, if I had been mayor, I would have certainly... given the deputy mayor a lot more things, responsibilities, things to do. So it's more of a teamwork approach.
Okay, well, this is KPTZ, and unfortunately that was the last. We are under a time limit. So, gentlemen, if you see me looking at my watch, it's not because you're boring. It's because this little buzzer is going to go off on my wrist in 9 seconds, and we have to wind this up. I want to thank you both for coming. I want to remind you that we are taking a week off from this program, and in 2 weeks we will be here with Amy Howard and Bernie Arthur. Following that, we have port candidates, and we are winding up with the headliner, as we do at U2 shows. Deborah Stinson and Monica McHager will battle it out on the 30th of August. This is Charlie Berman. Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you for listening.